This is the Geek Dads, the podcast of geekdad.com on the Wired Blog Network. This is episode 124. This year, I'm going to earn my Griswold title. Hello again, everyone. You found it. We're back. This is the Geek Dads, episode number 124. I am Ken Denby, editor and publisher of geekdad.com. With me again, as has become quite common and comforting and, you know, jocular. Well, jocularity. Who remembers MASH?
I do.
All right. Excellent. two of my wonderful co-editors at Geek Dad, Mr. Matt Blum. How are you doing, Matt? No, Matt is not two of my editors. First of the two, Matt Blum.
I'm doing okay. How are you?
It's a very interesting evening, but on the whole, positive. Had to run one dog to the vet immediately upon coming home. Just to take care of a little something, nothing damaging or troubling too much. But then it's like, okay, then come back home again through rush hour traffic, get home, run out with the family to go grab as fast a dinner as possible to get back here in time for a podcast. So, yeah. So if you see me go off screen and hear a little belch, that's the Mexican food coming back for
Thanks.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's quality programming here. Jonathan.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
Oh, not bad. We've got my kids didn't have school at all this week, so it's been interesting. We survived a sleepover at our house with two guests. So okay. We're, you know, keeping it small, but
limited trauma.
Yes. But I think that's enough sleepovers for a
lifetime.
The near future. my wife may feel otherwise. She was the one that had to get up early this morning and did not appreciate the, you know, giggling and laughing and.
Not and then going she had to sleep. Deal with the kids. Ba-dum-bum. Yeah. Well, awesome. Let's see. There's all sorts of very interesting, geeky stuff going on. Plenty of cool news over the last few days. Who is virtually on the edge of their seats for whatever this NASA announcement is going to be? Assuming that it hasn't come out in the last 3 hours since the last time I checked all my RSS feeds.
Which? Not me, probably.
There's a rumor going around on a number of blogs, and I think I put one up on our Elsewhere section today, that NASA is getting very close to making some sort of, quote, this one's for the history books, unquote, announcements about discoveries on Mars.
But they haven't verified it enough yet that they're willing to say it. And
right.
It hasn't come out yet.
Right. So. That there's been some off the record chatter, but nothing official yet. But, you know, potential for who knows what? Fossils? How about fossil? Would that be awesome?
Did they find Gary Sinise out there?
Ooh, that's reaching back. Did they find John Carter?
John Carter. Some very, very fast, you know, many-legged dog-like thing.
I don't know. You know, I mean, they had some good announcements with all of the, you know, what the word was on the water and this, that, and the other thing. But this one feels, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too worked up over it. But if when there's that kind of buzz, you know, are we there? Do we have definitive proof of life? And you know, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Also, extremely disruptive for many, many, many reasons, which will be fun to watch happen on the internet. Mm.
Well, let's wait.
I'm sure that'll be. There will not be any conspiracy theorists.
Oh, absolutely not.
Posting anything.
Yeah. There will be no one on the internet going, no, 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 it's not real. I don't believe it.
Yeah, well, on the
it'll other hand, it'll be the scientists this time.
Right. Yeah.
What scientists consider earth-shattering and what the general public considers earth-shattering are not necessarily.
That's very true as well. It will go down in the history books. There's a, they write everything down, so it's in history.
That's true.
Really earth-shattering. Maybe not so much. Hi, Jen. Not so much. But tell Jen she's just been greeted live on air.
Yes, I told her.
For all one of our viewers.
She says hi back.
Is that like a 0.000001 Q rating that we've got right now? Awesome. All right. What? Oh no, there is somebody else in there. Parker. Hello, Parker. All right. What else, guys?
Well, I mean, there's the Wii U haven't come out. I haven't actually.
Have any of us actually touched a Wii U yet?
I touched it briefly at Best Buy. They had one out to test.
Did you
to
touch somebody else's Wii U? No.
They had one out at Best Buy for the last like week or two, actually, to try out. And, you know, so I tried it out for about 5 minutes, and it was cool.
Okay.
You know, I can't see spending $300 on it, but it's cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, Z's review, of course, was pretty positive. I was, and really, all the word on sales and stuff has been very good. I get this feeling that. Like that, we may be a little bit too close to paying attention to tech stuff, and maybe I don't know. I mean, the Wii was actually an extremely loved family device. It's not.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not a gaming. It's not a gamer's box like the Xbox or the PS3, which I think was more often bought for one specific person in a family.
Mm.
Whereas the Wii, I think. Really has hold of this is the family's gaming system, and we may actually see it do extremely well.
Yeah, although the Kinect has taken some of that.
That is true. That is
some
true.
Of that audience away, but yeah, I mean the Wii U it might do that. I mean the Wii certainly was revolutionary in that it allowed more people to participate more easily, and it had the the fact that it was made it much easier for people who weren't used to using controllers to use it because right. it picked up on your motions to some degree. That was certainly very revolutionary, of course. Then the PS Move went along and did that, and then the Microsoft came out with the Kinect, which for all its flaws does it even better. So, I mean, it remains to be seen. I think that the price point is kind of high for what they are providing. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they will sell as much as they hope to.
It could be. I think Glenn in the chat room saying that their Xbox is used more for Netflix than games. Which, yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting that to a great extent these things are becoming our de facto set-top boxes as well. Because the Wii U is supposed to, once there's an update sometime in December, it's supposed to become a very interesting pass-through device, probably more like a Google TV than other things, wherein it will have, viewer guide capabilities and DVR capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it's got Hulu and Netflix on it and all of that stuff. So
just like everything else does.
Just like everything else. But I find that to be I will guarantee that there is a certain percentage of the population that owns a Wii and no other set-top box and will now look at getting a Wii U and discovering Netflix and Hulu and all of these add-on stuff, too. So... there's going to be a lot of different paths to similar ends going on right now. And I feel like the Wii is going to also benefit from this sort of undercurrent of pent-up demand for any kind of next-gen systems. Whether or not the graphics are any better than the current Xbox or PS3 remains to be seen, and may not be, but there will be a certain percentage that say, oh, this is the next new one, let's get that.
It's true, yeah, because neither Sony nor Microsoft has announced when their next gen is going to come out.
Right, so. There's nothing official going on, so they've basically all signed off on...
Certainly not this holiday season.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, so, clearly not.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I mean, Nintendo basically owns...
So Nintendo's got it.
...this season, period. Even, you know, except maybe for, I don't know, the PS Vita, but... That's not doing a whole lot.
Right.
It's not doing as well as they'd hoped, no.
But all although there's the games.
Well, the new games keep coming out for it.
Yeah.
So,
how about Call of Duty Black Ops 2, $500 million opening week?
Yeah.
Video games are the new blockbuster movies.
No, but it's been like that for years now.
Yeah, yeah. But more and more and more, because I wonder what Assassin's Creed 3 did, and of course Halo 4, and it's all cycling around.
It's true. I mean, there certainly is a lot of money pouring into those things.
And to a certain extent, there's value. You know, when you compare it to a movie, there's a lot more value for your money in terms of how long. You know, you go to a movie, you're paying $12 for a 2 to 2.5 hour experience. You're buying a $50 to $60 video game. You're getting 40, 50, 60 more hours of entertainment.
Yeah, plus you can replay it without having to pay again.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting time for that kind of thing. All right, guys. So what are you planning for your holiday decorations? Do you guys do Christmas lights?
Not much.
No, we Christmas lights.
Well, I don't. Jen does, but only to a degree. We have.
Do you light your Hanukkah bush?
We have some small. We usually have a few small Christmas trees, and maybe she puts up, you know, just some white lights on them and ornaments and puts them in the window. The real more of the decorations are up at her parents' house where we go for Christmas.
Got it.
It being fairly easy to pick which house to go to for Christmas, you know, which parents' house to go to. For Hanukkah, all we do is we light the menorah, and that's pretty much it.
Okay. Jonathan, anything, you know? Do you take down the power?
We hang up some Christmas lights, but last year we were going to be gone for parts of the winter, and so we ended up getting a tree anyway and putting it in the window. But I didn't, you know, I haven't gotten like gutter hooks and figured out how to hang lights on this very, very tall house of ours. So, you know, I think we did like the porch. We put lights along the edge of the porch. But it's you know, the guy that came and installed the windows was like, yeah, your house is really high. I don't like being up there. So, you know, I think probably I'm not going to go climbing out on the roof for
no,
for too many lights. We usually don't do a whole lot. Yeah, we do the decorations indoors. We pull out all the stuff, you know, that we have that we pack away and keep in storage for the entire year. We'll pull all that out and set it out, but you know, we don't do a whole lot of elaborate light displays.
Yeah. Well, I'll make up for both of you. I have the Clark Griswold reputation in our neighborhood. And I mean, interestingly enough, now, first of all, what's fun about this neighborhood in some sense is things start very early because we do have a pretty strong Hindu population in our neighborhood and in the area. So lights go up for Diwali before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And basically, they're using Christmas lights. They put up basically the Hindu folks put up Christmas lights before for Diwali and leave them up through the season, which is awesome. So that gets everything primed. Now, I've not been particularly. I have a reputation in the neighborhood for having the best outdoor lights. I have to say, it's never been, you know, not Clark Griswold really crazy, because I'm not competing with anybody in the neighborhood. First of all, there's you know, people do some stuff, but nothing nuts. I mean, I've gone to the point where it's like, you know, all the eaves are covered and there's some lights up in some of the trees, and we have one of these, or we have had in the past one of these sort of Mr. Christmas units that you can get from like Target or a Costco or whatever, that's a 6-channel controller that has like 24 pre-programmed MIDI songs that it plays and runs the lights off of that, which is fun. It's been, you know, it's been enjoyable over the years, and it was, you know, the most that anyone was doing in our neighborhood or for quite a ways around. But for a number of years, I've gotten really tired of those MIDI songs. And of course, it's such a backward thing. There's no way you can switch out the music. And right. It's completely hardwired and so forth. So this year, my wife acted as an enabler. And I ordered and have the basic unit from a company called Lightorama. Lightorama.com. These folks do prosumer and pro level lighting controllers. This is their baseline controller that has 16 channels.
16
channels. Oh wait, hold on. I have it right here. Hold on.
Okie dokie. You sure this is a Clark Griswold crazy?
All right. 16 channels coming out. You have to plug it in with two power in. So it needs to get plugged into two circuits.
That's probably good. Yeah.
Those are the innards right there. If you're looking live, obviously nobody's able to hear this. It's basically like a small circuit breaker electrical box, and it has circuit board and transformer on the inside that basically will channel, you know, turn two power inputs into 16 power outputs, and you hook it. It connects via an Ethernet cable off of the board to a USB converter, and then into a computer.
Can you full screen your video?
Oh, I could do that. Let's see. Bum, bum, bum.
Glenn is asking.
So like that.
There you go.
Does that work, Glenn? So there it is for our live studio audience. And so what this...
You're showing the wrong camera.
I'm showing the wrong camera for that one. There we go. all right. So while that gets shown off. All right. So that all gets plugged in. It hooks up to a computer running Windows. I'm actually running Windows off of virtualizing it on my MacBook Pro. And there's controller software, and the controller software is this really awesome mix of components. There is a sequencer, which basically looks like, for anything like a if you've ever used music software, you have 16 tracks. You start a new sequence, you pick what your music file is, what your audio file is, so you import an MP3. It will suss out the timing by analyzing the track, so it can hear the beats, and it'll give you beat lines. And then you have the ability to assign light, you know, circuit one turns on every other beat and turns off, or circuit ramps up over four beats and then ramps down over four beats, or a shimmer effect, or all these things, everything that you can think of. This is like stepping into using Photoshop after having used Microsoft Paint for a while. And so you can do this 16 tracks, 16 controlled strings of lights or whatever, and do this with song after song after song. That's awesome. That's really fantastic. And there are people out there like sharing ones that they've done. So I've been able to find a bunch to, to start with. And I'm going to try and build a couple of my own, try and use some of our fun, like 12 Days of Geekmas songs and so forth, and put some of those into the rotation. So you build. All right. One thing that you can do while you're building your sequences that this one just sort of left me mind boggled is they have a visualizer. What you do is you go out, take a picture of the front of your house, import the photo into the visualizer, and with the visualizer, you can draw all your strings of lights on top of the photo, assign each one of those to a channel, and then test all your sequences on the visualizer. So they flash on and off, they ramp up, they ramp down. You can watch your light show as you build it in the sequencer on the visualizer without having to go out and hook it up to everything.
Well, that certainly does save time, I would say.
I mean, this is just, it's mind-bogglingly cool. It is awesome. That is and, great. So you build your sequences, and then you take a bunch of sequences and you build a show. And a show has, like, a startup sequence, so you can always have, like, one song and one light sequence at the beginning of your show, and then it has a whole middle part where you can have it randomly run all the sequences in the middle or run them in a specific sequence or repeat a set sequence over until you stop it. And it has a ramp-down sequence. And then it has a scheduler, and if you want to just have things all set and your computer is sitting on all the time, you can schedule it when it starts and stops every night of the week. So you can completely automate the whole kit and caboodle. So this is the bare bones. This is a single 16-channel controller that I've got that I'm doing this with for this season. Having delved into the forums and the boards and the resources that are out there, I am such the noob. This is the basic low level. There are people out there that do this so passionately that they, because these things can daisy chain.
Oh, jeez.
There are people out there who run 10, 15, 20 controllers. So they have 160, 320 channels, and they've built sequences for these things. These channels don't have to just control lights turning on and off. They can control servos and other sensors. They can do anything that you've probably seen happen at Disneyland. They can probably do. And I am now working. It's like I've stepped into a whole new level of consciousness with respect to Christmas lights. And I am completely new, and I'm just trying out the simplest this year. And man, I'm just freaking out. It's so cool. And there will definitely be. I'm gonna get this thing going, and then I'll take some video. I think I've figured out how I could potentially live stream the lights for a couple of nights around the holidays. I could do it on Geek Dad because I have a wireless camera that I can use, outdoor camera that I can use, and I can run this live stream on top, you know, screen capturing the output from the camera. So I can.
Your ISP will love you for that.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's coming up. I mean, if you want to blow your mind, go to lightorama.com. And look, they have something else that just takes it even another level. They have these light cords or light ropes that have RGB. They're 15-foot-long ropes with controlled RGB LEDs inside that can be so finely controlled. They're like each one is its own.
Oh.
160 channel controller. So if you watch the videos that they've got there, these things change color and the colors can zoom up and down through the rope so seamlessly that it looks like magic. And you can program these things to do just the most. There is one video there where they've taken something like 11 of these ropes, and each one of these ropes costs like $250-$300.
Wow. Already.
Right. Maybe it might be like 180, 190, something like that. But yeah, somebody took 11 of these ropes and created a Christmas tree shape out of them, mm-hmm. and has these effects going on. That's just, oh, holy cow. So,
well, I was just thinking, you know, if you get enough of those, I mean, obviously it would cost a fortune. You could essentially create a monitor.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. You could play
video on your house.
You know? Right. that's what Ken's striving for.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it's going over the top, boys. This year, I'm going to earn my Griswold title. But, I mean, you know, my big thing was I got so sick of the MIDI music. I wanted to be able to run my own music. Which, you know, that's what you really, really is fun. And so being able to actually create my own sequences is going to be really neat. That's the geek right there. It's like, I am not satisfied with the commercial over-the-counter stuff. I need something that I can control and program myself. And so that's what I'm doing.
Yep.
So that'll be my Christmas. All right. What else, guys? Any, where are we at on holiday movies?
Rise of the Guardians comes out tomorrow.
Oh, good.
I've not seen it, but it's gotten some pretty good buzz.
Yeah, I'm hearing
decent. It's got good voices. I mean, it's got Alec Baldwin and Chris Pine and Jude Law, who plays the villain, you know, which is, cause, of course, because he's got the British accent. So he's got a villain.
Gotta he has be the to villain. Be
the villain. Yeah. yeah, it certainly looks, you know, the animation certainly looks excellent.
Let's see.
Who's it by?
It's very pretty. It's DreamWorks.
Okay.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes is showing it at 76% right now, which is very good.
That's certainly respectable.
I would just...
Oh, gosh, Red Dawn is at 14%.
Dawn. Oh, I'm 14%. Showing 13. I'm showing 13% here.
Oh, really?
Same difference, really.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, really, Red Dawn in 2012?
Yeah, that's just...
Really?
It's nuts.
Dated much? I mean, really. I don't know.
Yeah, now my understanding with that was that originally the movie was written as it was China attacking, and they shot the whole thing and then have re-edited it and changed it so that it's North Korea.
Right, because we all look the same anyway.
Right.
Of course. Yeah, it's odd.
And North Korea, you know, yes, they have a million people in their army, but yeah, we know that they're... military technology is totally on par.
The only danger they would really have is nukes, of course. You know, so the army itself would not be a danger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Skyfall. We are going to go as a family go see Skyfall tomorrow night. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm going to try to go see it this weekend.
And it's showing 92% on.
Oh, everybody likes it. Absolutely, everybody does. Yeah, it's. Yeah, it sounds really excellent, and I got to see Lincoln. Have you seen
Wreck-It Ralph? I went to see Lincoln on. I took my kids to see Wreck-It Ralph a couple weekends ago.
Ralph was a ton of fun,
and then saw Lincoln with my wife on Friday. So it's good.
Yeah, I definitely got to see
it. I won't give away the ending, but...
Yes, I know. It's just like, spoilers? I don't know. You know. What is actually...
But, I mean, you know, it's still... It's like, you know, they play out... Most of the movie is really focusing on, you know, the passing of the amendment. And just the wrangling of the votes and all of that. And even though it's like, okay, I mean, I know it passes. Like, you're still... tied up in the scene where they're actually doing the vote, you know, and you're like, you get caught up in that. And, I mean, the actors in it are just fantastic. It's really amazing.
Yeah. That's everything I've heard.
Fun. Really enjoyed that.
And Life
especially,
of Pilots,
especially, King, Alan Tudyk.
Oh, yeah.
King Candy.
In Wreck-It Ralph, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. He stole that movie in many ways.
And he sounds exactly like Edwin.
I know. He was...
I would never.
Beautiful thing.
If I hadn't known it was Alan Tudyk, it would never have occurred to me to guess that.
But you know what? You can see where he gets it. You know, for whatever else you think about the movie, Transformers: Dark Side of the Moon, when he plays Totoro's manservant.
Was
it number three?
I haven't seen it.
I didn't see that one.
Oh. He is literally the best part of that.
Therefore, saw no reason to see the other ones.
Yeah, no, he was literally the best part of it. He plays so you've seen the first two?
I've seen the first one, and then I decided I didn't need to see any more of Michael Bay's Transformers.
Yeah,
same here. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, all right. So then this would all be spoiler. You don't care, so it wouldn't be spoilers. But
I already know the plot of.
Anyway, Tudyk is in three.
Such as it is.
playing the oddly dramatic manservant to John Turturro's slightly crazy celebrity scientist, and Tudyk is hilarious.
Oh, he's got great comic timing. I mean, you can tell that back from you know from Firefly.
Yeah. He did. Yeah. Have you seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Oh yes,
that's
hysterical. It's hysterical. Absolutely hysterical.
Total. That's what a great movie. That gets Geek Dad seal of approval. If you have not seen it, go find it. It's available, I believe, on Netflix and Amazon Instant and so forth.
I believe, yeah.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil, the lovely story of two rednecks trying to renovate an old cabin in the woods and the idiotic college students who mistake them for psycho killers and then proceed to get themselves all killed in accidents.
Yes.
And jocularity.
And other movies, there's Life of Pi looks excellent.
That really does. I was watching the review on Totally Rad Show last night, and do you ever watch Totally Rad Show?
No, I haven't.
Those guys do a good job. It's interesting because you learn how to interpret their reviews for how you will react to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Like Alex Albrecht, he's going to be the guy that really likes more action-oriented films and comedies and stuff. And all the names are going to go out of my head now. Trachtenberg is the actual, you know, he directs things. He's very wrapped up in the art of cinema. So he intellectualizes things a lot. And then, I am so terribly sorry that I'm forgetting everybody's names. The other guy who is, very, very balanced for stuff. And two out of three of them thought it was one of the best movies in the last decade.
No.
Basically saying, instant classic, it's a beautiful film, go out and see it.
It certainly looks gorgeous. And Ang Lee, that's the kind of film he does well.
Right.
I mean, when he's tried to make things like
No Hulk. No.
Yeah, the Hulk he did not do well with. And some of those other films, I can kind of take or leave. But when he tries, when he does something beautiful, like, you know, like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Right.
He does it really, really well, and I've never read the book this is based on, but I've heard it's just a really fascinating book too.
Yeah, I've read the book. It's been
several years ago.
Yeah, several years ago, read the book. It's very good. I mean, it's very good. It's fascinating. It's one of these things where, you know, you read the book and you're like, wait a minute, you know, I have to go back and like, what was going on there?
Right. Yeah, I've heard it's the, where you're not sure if it's an unreliable narrator or not.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is totally the season of unfilmable films.
Yeah, yeah.
Because,
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas, too.
Well, hopefully this does better than Cloud Atlas did.
Has it tanked?
It pretty much did, yeah.
Oh, it's too bad.
I didn't see that one either. I haven't read the book either. I have two books named Cloud Atlas. One is called Cloud Atlas and one is called The Cloud Atlas because years ago I heard about it and said, oh, that sounds great.
Got the wrong one.
And ordered a used copy and got the wrong one.
No.
And then, you know, found the other one. And I know, I think maybe McSweeney's, no, maybe it was Huffington Post. Someone, the author of the other Cloud Atlas had written an article titled something like, I also wrote a book named Cloud Atlas, but Tom Hanks did not make a movie.
Also, correction, Jeff Cannata is the third guy on Totally Rad Show, and I hate the fact that I forgot that while put under pressure. And I've always wondered whether Dan Trachtenberg, who's the sort of more auteur film guy, is any relation to Michelle Trachtenberg, but I don't think he actually is from Buffy.
That's a good question.
But I think I've looked it up before and it wasn't, but that's...
Yeah, Cloud Atlas, even in its opening weekend, only did $9.8 million.
Mm. Yeah, I think it may be a great film, but I think it's too ambitious for a general audience.
It was also almost 3 hours long.
Yeah.
Which is not, you know, for a movie that's not, you know, doesn't have like a built-in audience like the Lord of the Rings movies did,
right,
is going to turn a lot of people away. Because they do, I really want to spend that long in the movie theater for something I'm really not sure about, you know? So. Yeah.
Yeah. It's coming fast. This is going to be a neat holiday season.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the Rise of the Guardians. Actually, we did a thing over the weekend at the... There's this this place, the Gaylord National Resort in the National Harbor, which is just across the Virginia Maryland border, where they've built up this whole shopping area, and it's very nice and lots of hotels and such. Anyway, the Gaylord Resort there, they have this deal with DreamWorks, and they have these various packages that they've done with DreamWorks before, where, you know, they have like meet and greets with characters like Shrek, and they do movie nights for kids and such. Right. What they've taken to doing the last couple of years, this is the first time we've been there, they have what they call they do an ice experience, where they put up this enormous tent outside the hotel, mm-hmm. and they make this ice experience basically based on something out of DreamWorks. Last year it was Madagascar. This time it was Shrek the Halls. but they have literally millions of pounds of ice, and they make these elaborate structures. They make slides and such so you can go down ice slides.
Wow.
And it's huge. So we went there with the kids, and you know they give you parkas to put on even over your coats because it's 9 degrees in the area where the ice is. It's freaking cold. And we had a blast. I mean, the kids loved it. They loved the ice slides. And it's pretty cool, you know, seeing like the big Shrek head, you know, made out of ice with the green glow behind it. And they had like Shrek and, you know, picking up one of the kids to either put on or decorate the tree with. It wasn't really clear. a dead squirrel of some sort.
Oh no.
Which was very cool. I like that part especially. But it was definitely very cool. But they also had, in addition to that, they had a treasure hunt that you could do at the hotel itself, based on Rise of the Guardians. So you could go around and look for various posters. They had like Jack Frost's staff had like a coded message on it, and it was kind of cool. They had the Easter Bunny's eggs. You had to figure out what egg matched which color matched which letter, and so then rearrange them to form a word. And the kids had a blast running around doing that too. So it looked kind of cool. It's not a cheap event that they do there, but they had a blogger media event kind of thing. So they had invited us there for free, which was cool. But I do recommend it if you don't mind spending the money on it. They have a resort in Texas and one in somewhere else too, I think.
Yeah.
I think they do similar things there. But anyway, the Rise of the Guardians, it looks like fun. It looks a little overproduced, as DreamWorks animated movies can be, but fun nonetheless.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, why don't we look at some posts of the week, and then we will get ourselves out of this fine... this fine podcast we're doing here. Jonathan. Do you have
I am trying to remember what I've read this week. Well, all of them, but
here, I'll go first. I've got two I want to bring up. They're actually both from today, but the first one that really caught my eye was Kathy's review of the Crayola digital light design.
Oh, yeah.
This thing looks pretty psycho awesome. It is basically like a spinning light pyramid, but that you use a special stylus on it, and it you think of this like, I'm trying to describe, like those lights where it's all LEDs on a single rod, and then if you wave it back and forth, you can program it so that it'll spell out words as it's waving through the air, that strobe effect that you can read stuff in. This is doing that in RGB colors in this spinning column shape, and then you can program frames to turn it into an animation. So you can literally, you're on frame one, you draw something in colors. It's very pixelated. It's very sort of 8-bit looking. Maybe 16.
Like light bright
yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, effect. It's just definitely a step above, yeah, maybe a little bit more, but very much that idea. But you can, you go frame by frame, you create your image, and then you can make subtle changes, go frame by frame by frame by frame, and then you can run it like an animated GIF, and you have this light pulsating animated drawing that you've created. I think this looks insanely fun, especially for kids, and especially for anyone who wants to open it up, hack it, so that you can control it off of your computer, which I really, really, really want to see. So, I would suggest people go out and find that, because that looks totally rad. The Crayola Digital Light Designer. And then I also just wanted to point out that, maybe a little bit too late, really enjoyed Doug Cornelius's how to safely fry your turkey this Thanksgiving. It is something I would like to try someday, but you know,
I've had it at some of the else's.
I've had it at other
people's houses once or twice, and it is very, very good. It's really greasy, but it's very good.
It's very good. Yeah, my wife's uncle, he'd do that every so often, and but he did it outside, like on concrete and far away from everything else. And
Well, my brother-in-law is a firefighter. And he says that, every Thanksgiving, they get so many calls from people who just don't know what they're doing and set fire to their garage, their house, their deck, something. Yeah. It's like, really? Really?
So
people who do basic things like forget that, you know, to add in the volume of the turkey when they're figuring out how much oil to put in to the pot.
Or the whole, you know, don't fry a frozen turkey bit.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Jonathan, do you have a post of the week?
Oh, sure. I'll mention the run free race. I know this is one of my posts, but I think it's a great idea that everyone should go sign up for.
It's a Kickstarter.
So, yes, it's on Kickstarter now. It's called the Run. I think you can go to runfreerace.com. That bumps you to the Kickstarter. But it's by the folks at Ridiculous, or it's ridiculo.us. And it's kind of an experiment in the internet and what makes real. The idea is, nowadays everybody wants to see pictures of anything, right? Pictures didn't happen.
Right.
And they said, well, what if you have enough people posting photos of an event that didn't actually take place? How many people does it take to make something appear real? And so their Kickstarter is listed under photography. And the idea is, you go and you sign up for this marathon in February of next year called the Run Free. And you will get all of your regular marathon trappings. For $10, you get like the basic registration. You get a number, right? Your little race number.
Right.
You get a sticker. If you sign up for $25, you get the T-shirt. You sign up a little more, you get the medal. And then there's sponsorships and things like that. But basically, you know, the idea is, well, you know, you start tweeting about it now. Use the hashtag RunFree or RunFree 2013. You know, I'm about training for RunFree. And then on that day, right, you get, you know, you'll get your packet before then. On that day of the marathon, you will start tweeting. You know, like, oh, I'm at the, you know, I'm at the starting line. Whatever, everyone's tweeting at the same time. They're at the starting line of RunFree 2013. You know, post a photo. You know, go do whatever. Come back out, you know, 20 minutes later, have someone take a picture of you running past and tweet some more, you know, and basically create a marathon that is not taking place and post, you know, you get enough people posting it to the internet. And they say they're not trying to fool. I mean, it's like, you know, you go to Google and Google for RunFree and you will immediately say, you know, see that it's not real.
Right, I was going to say, but the Kickstarter's out there. So
right. The Kickstarter's right there. You know, he's like, but what is it that makes it seem real and real enough that makes people think twice? You know, and personally, I mean, I think it's an interesting experiment in sort of internet literacy.
Right.
I linked to this article about the Pacific Northwest tree octopus. There was an article where, you know, they had students go and do research about the Pacific Northwest tree octopus, which was, you know, this very elaborate hoax website, and had kids, you know, write a report on this octopus. And then afterwards said, okay, well, did you know that this is actually made up? You know, here, we'll take you to, like, this is the artist who made these images. These are the people who wrote about this thing. And the kids would not believe the researchers who were telling them that this is fake, because they were convinced, because they saw the evidence on the internet. And I think it's important when for people to know, you know, like, how do you know when something is real and when it's not? And how do you get people to, you know, to check Snopes and to check Google before they forward you emails? And it's like, well, look, go get this person to be a part of the RunFree marathon, and they will see how easy it is to create something that is not real, because they will be a part of it, right?
Uh-huh.
And say, look, this is the internet. This is how it works. This is, you know, this is how things happen. And, you know, along the way, you get to, you know, wear a marathon t-shirt and post some goofy photos.
that is very awesome.
That is very clever, I have to admit. Yeah. I mean, because, of course, I mean, hoaxes have been around for centuries, of course.
Yeah.
The internet simply actually makes it easier to detect them.
Right. It makes it easier to detect it, but also makes it easier to spread things that are, you know, easily disproved, right? I mean,
it's amazing how many people are willing to believe things that are just that, where 5 seconds of investigation would tell them that it is false. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that explains so much in the world. All right, Matt, how about you? One last post of the week.
Well, I was going to mention Curtis's post from today about also about a Kickstarter called Super Funner, which is supposed to is the gamifying education field.
Right.
This is something I've thought about for a long time because when I was in sixth grade, my teacher had a game actually that he had developed, which I think he actually ended up selling, where you basically, you got points for doing different tasks,
right.
And you know, it was competitive, but you know, all very educational things, but fun things as well. And I think it's great that it's catching on in a wider, much more widely now.
Yeah.
That I guess, especially because, you know, of course, you know, video games have become such a, you know, a basic part of everybody, of every kid's growing up these days. Whether it's, you know, on a console or on, you know, a smartphone or whatever, or a tablet, excuse me, then they're used to achievements and everything. So I guess it's, you know, sort of a way of connecting them, you know, making that actually useful. And from what I've seen of this Kickstarter, it looks like they really have something some good ideas.
And then, excellent. So, yeah, I know my wife, who is a teacher, has done for a number of years in her classes, they would do something called a classroom monopoly that had to do with, you know, earning monopoly money for doing different stuff, and you would like earn rent on your desk, and then you could earn stuff for different things. And if you say, and then every Friday, like, there was an auction, and there would be like treats or toys or stuff that were auctioned off. But some people were smart because you could potentially save up your classroom monopoly money and then buy other people's desks. You could even buy the teachers' desks and then start getting the rent on them. So some kids would go, oh, you're offering me $500 for my desk? Sure, I'll take it now because I can go get these treats and this and that. Awesome. But the other kids, the thinking forward kids, slowly built up real estate and then were getting a bunch of rent money every week and were getting other treats and stuff. So it was, you know, it was both incentivizing certain behaviors and, you know, a journey into commerce.
So. Awesome. And I watched the link in there to the Penny Arcade TV bit about gamifying education. I highly recommend watching that because that's also, it's not necessarily the same thing that Superfunder is doing exactly, but it explains. Right, it explains gamifying, and it gives some various sort of high-level ideas of how you might, you know, introduce things into a classroom. And it's really well done. I mean, it's, you know, I think I'm not new to the idea of gamifying, but I think, you know, that was a great way to explain it to someone who's like, I don't know, what does this mean? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it does. It does get the concept across very nicely, yeah, to people who aren't used to the gaming terms and such. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, cool, guys.
Good advice.
Well, I think we have come to the end of another awesome podcast. So, anything you guys want to play? You know, obviously, we're just about on Thanksgiving. It'll be pretty quiet. We'll probably throw a post or two up, but I think we'll probably take it fairly easy over the Thanksgiving weekend. Take a little rest, a couple of posts a day, nothing too extreme, but
pretty much a weekend schedule.
Yeah. Anything you guys got in preparation coming up soon?
I'm working on a big article that I've told you about a little bit. I don't want to say too much about it until I've got all my facts, and because it's like actual journalism too. So
actual journalism. Oh my goodness!
I know it's amazing, but
this will be the, you know, hot story of the season. A billion page views and.
I hope so, but I just think it's
awesome.
It's pretty cool, and I'm aiming for next Monday because I was aiming for this Monday, but I just didn't have time to get all the facts in order, and just besides, I'll get more page views on next Monday anyway.
Very good, very good. Jonathan, there's still a lot of stuff on that bookshelf.
Here, I've got there's a lot of stuff on the bookshelf. I loved Jim Kelly's, you know, I'm so behind book review, where he was like, I'm so behind, look at this big stack, and it's like five books. Wah, wah, wah. Like, really? Wah, wah, wah.
You think you're
this is what I've been working on. Here's my sneak peek for people who are actually viewing the podcast. But I have been sent the Mega Bloks Halo Forward Unto Dawn set.
That
and it's like 2,800 piece.
Wow.
Like enormous spaceship. And that comes, I mean, it comes apart too. Like you can lift up this, you know, the roof so you can see. I can't even see it. But you can actually have like, you know, the Master Chief's little chamber that opens up and he goes in there. There's a little light up Cortana in there. and the ship is made to break into two pieces so that it breaks away into the two pieces, you know, and then all of the roof, like the roof line comes off so you can actually play inside. And it's been fun. I've been trying to, you know, I've been building that with my kids, but, you know, they want to do the, I want to put the pieces on. I don't want to help you look for the pieces. So I end up, you know, the big part of it is looking for the pieces in many, many, many little baggies that are scattered all over. So I'm about halfway done, and I'm taking lots of photos. So we're going to have, at the end of it, we're going to have a stop motion little video of the assembly.
Oh, I can't wait to see that. That's awesome.
Very cool. I tried to do that once, but I had a hard time getting all the
And then we will never take it apart.
Yeah.
It's going to be roughly... Yeah, I didn't set up the tripod and do it from the same. I mean, because you got to move the ship around to put pieces on, so it's, you know, roughly a stop motion animation.
So after you're done, get some spray lacquer and just seal it all into one.
But then you won't be able to open it up. And
exactly. Cool stuff.
Well, no, you could take it apart into the section, spray lacquer it, and then come on and off. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Biggest thing for me to pitch is that we are getting awfully close to 12 days of Geekmas. It's shaping up to be pretty awesome again this year, so keep an ear out for that. We're probably still a couple of weeks away from starting. We'll probably be recording them pretty soon, but that's going to be a big thing. Other than that, let's see. I've got a there's still a contest going right now. You could win a Philips Sonicare Diamond Clean electronic toothbrush, which is actually a pretty cool high-tech piece of kit. So I urge you to go take a look at that. And I will just tease this. I had a lovely phone call today with someone who's interested in possibly someone from Geek Dad being involved on a cable network news show sometime next year. So this could be getting real, people. Very scary. As my wife says, I have a voice for radio, a face for television, and a body for widescreen movies. Anyway, all right, guys. Matt, thank you very much, as always.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Especially for laughing at my lame, self-deprecating humor. Jonathan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, fantastic.
Thank you.
And Glenn, our sole viewer in the chat room live, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. And so next week should be another Hip Tracks. In 2 weeks, we'll be back with a Geek Dads. Until then, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time. So long.
So long.
Hey. Geek Dad.